This is TWiT.
Last week, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took the oath of office to become the youngest congresswoman in history. And at the same time, a video surfaced of the congresswoman dancing on a rooftop. That makes it sound much more scandalous than it really is, and less interesting than it is from an internet copyright perspective. Here to explain the history of this meta meme is staff writer for Wired, Louise Mitsakis, who covers security and social platforms. Welcome back to the show, Louise.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So the video, which we will show, not because we will show in its fair use because we're talking about it. And it was uploaded in 2009. Tell us about the AOC video and the video that inspired it.
So it was uploaded in 2009 when she was still a student at Boston University. As kind of an aside, I think this is really fascinating because she's one of the first kind of prominent lawmakers to be young enough that we can actually kind of find this stuff. But so it was part of a wider meme, and she and her friends who uploaded this video were not the first to do this. This other woman actually uploaded a mashup of these kind of classic 80s movies. The Breakfast Club was kind of the most prominent one in the video, and it was mixed with this Phoenix song, which was a big hit at the time. And so people started copying the Breakfast Club video, and what they did was that they made their own videos copying the Molly Ringwald dancing style. So it was a mashup, basically, and it was, you know, an early version of a viral meme on YouTube. Only a couple years after YouTube had started did this video come out.
So the creator of the first video, she said the band that the song was from the video, Phoenix, loved it. They invited her to a show, but their record company, Liberation Music, not so much. Tell us what they did.
Yeah, so Phoenix is a New Zealand artist, and they were represented by this record label in Australia. And what happened is that in 2013, a Harvard law professor, Lawrence Lessig, who is actually a copyright reform legend, he uploaded a video at an event in Korea where he was actually showing these videos and talking about fair use. And then the record label sent a DMCA takedown notice and said, "You're violating our copyright," which is extremely ironic. And he filed a counter notice and said, "No, I'm not. You know, this is fair use. This is for educational purposes." Ironically, this is for educational purposes about fair use. And they ignored that, said, "We're going to sue you." So Lessig and the Electronic Frontier Foundation countersued, and they won the lawsuit and settled for an undisclosed sum, which was then donated to the EFF. But it's this really interesting battle because, you know, were they to have lost and were, you know, these other Listomania videos, you know, other manifestations of the meme, had they been targeted, you know, we would have, you know, possibly lost this video of a future congresswoman to history, you know, to overzealous copyright protection.
Yeah. And I mean, what's interesting to me is that now, you know, like you say, we're kind of in this modern era of people publishing so much of their lives on YouTube. We're moving into this world where this is going to be more prevalent. Like, this is kind of just the beginning, right? And over the next 10, 15, 20 years, this is going to, this is kind of the beginning of this new window into the, you know, people's lives, essentially, and taking something that once seemed so innocent and maybe shedding new light onto it through a different lens later as their lives progress. So it's fascinating to me there. Another kind of interesting thought I had on this copyright parallel, not just of the music, but of the dance moves. I'm sure you've heard that, you know, in recent months, Fortnite, the video game, has had its own challenges to whether the dance moves, or what they call emotes, in the game are copyrightable or copyrighted, that someone could claim and say, "Hey, don't put that dance move in that video because it's it, well, that was my dance move. That was my move." What about the Breakfast Club dance moves? I mean, is there any, I don't know, how does copyright apply with that and not just the music itself?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's really interesting about copyright policy is that it seems really straightforward. Like, I created this thing, I own it, I don't really see what the issue is. But, you know, I think the Fortnite example, this example really shows that it's much more complicated than you might think. For example, there was another lawsuit that was settled late last month over a YouTube star who sued another YouTube star named Poppy, arguing that she stole her persona, you know, that she had, you know, owned the intellectual property to her persona and Poppy had stolen it. And that was also settled out of court and there was no money exchanged. But I do think it's really interesting, especially in the age of kind of taking memes and people extremely quickly reshaping a piece of culture, you know, millions of different times. I think that that's really difficult. And I do think that there are situations, to be fair, when a small artist gets ripped off by the biggest video game in the world, for example, you can argue, or by a, you know, an artist much bigger than them. And I do think that there are, you know, genuine issues for the copyright holders. But, you know, I don't really want to live in a world where college students can't dance on a roof and then upload a video to YouTube of them doing it. You know, it is a really hard line, I think, that we haven't really figured out in the age of the internet at all.
Yeah.
So in your piece, you write that current copyright policy more unfairly affects underrepresented groups. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think in some situations, for sure. The example I use in the piece is from the early 2000s when Biggie Smalls was sued because he had sampled a couple of songs in his in one of his albums. And now those samples actually don't appear if you buy the record today because the copyright holders, the record label of the samples, sued him. So I do think this can be a problem where you're having courts and record labels actually police the intellectual and art being created by an underrepresented community. And I think that that happens a lot. And you know, what also kind of happens is that copyright law gets wielded for other purposes. Like I've seen video game companies issue DMCA takedowns against streamers that they don't like for streaming their video game, for example, and just as a kind of form of protest against the streamer, not as really because they're upset about someone playing their game and promoting their game. But it is kind of this weird gray area that I don't think has been totally decided by the courts yet, especially in the age of YouTube and, you know, Tumblr and Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Lawrence Lessig. Like you said, he's always been a huge proponent of fair use, supported what he called back then, back in 2008, remix culture. Obviously, that was a while ago. That was more than 10 years ago at this point. Has remix culture survived and thrived over the past 10 years? What is the condition of fair use now as compared to then? Because a lot's happened to challenge our thoughts around fair use. YouTube is just one big example.
Yeah, I mean, so another kind of issue that people have been talking about recently is this court case last year where a judge ruled that it, you know, possibly was a copyright infringement to embed certain kinds of media and news articles. You know, embedding a video from a tweet in a news article to discuss it or something. Like, there is kind of this blurry line that we haven't really figured out. You know, the age of BuzzFeed, where people were just embedding tons of media and news articles, you know, that's kind of come into question about whether or not, is it okay if someone took a photo and then you embed that photo in your news article without, you know, paying for the copyright for that photo? I think there is still a lot of issues that are coming up that are, you have the potential to impact the way that the web works and how web pages and embedding and hyperlinking work. You know, we've seen proposals out of Europe where Spain wanted to charge for hyperlinking, or, you know, not being able to hyperlink without, you know, paying the person who you're aggregating a news story from or aggregating a blog from. I definitely think that you're also seeing a clash between judges and courts who don't necessarily understand how the internet functions, which makes all of this way more complicated than it probably needs to be.
How much of this is just a simple algorithm problem? Like, you know, YouTube just using this scattershot technique of going through, just taking things down, the three strikes you're out. You know, the original person who uploaded this had her original account was taken down because of this. And, you know, it would just disappeared into the ether. It never would have come back up if this video wasn't found someplace, you know, if Lessig hadn't won his lawsuit. So how much of this is just YouTube randomly taking stuff down because of an algorithm?
So it is pretty automated through the content ID system, so that, you know, if you upload a song today that has, you know, it's copyrighted, you're probably not going to be able to keep it up there. And I think some of that is warranted, right? You know, artists deserve to get paid and you shouldn't just listen to music for free on YouTube with no ads. You know, you should be using something like Spotify or whatever if you want to really support those artists. So I think the content ID can be a good system. However, there are kind of all of these situations where stuff just gets taken down haphazardly and the copyright holders are not necessarily even looking at the videos that they're taking down because it's happening in an automated way. So I definitely think that that is a problem. It's just so vast and random. You know, I could upload a video and it doesn't get caught by the algorithms for whatever reason, whereas you might upload something that is very clearly fair use, but it gets flagged. I think it's gotten slightly better over time. But it's definitely still a problem. And a lot of stuff like streaming video games, you know, talking about music, which, you know, some people would argue is fair use, I think is still kind of in this weird gray area where you can still be served a DMCA takedown notice and you might still have to fight that. And it's not necessarily as clear cut as it might seem to everyone.
I know in the early 2000s, there was, you know, that was a time when many, many people just download music illegally because there was no way really to do it. You know, you had to buy the $17 CD or you could, you know, use a service to download music. But then when iTunes came around, there was sort of, you know, there was now a legal way to do it more easily, pay 99 cents for a song. I'm noticing, like, if you go into like Instagram stories, you can add like popular music to your story. I assume that Instagram is then paying the artist for that. I mean, do you see that technology becoming more popular, like easier for us to just make videos with music and we're not maybe paying so much money, but somebody is paying the artists?
Yeah, I think you've seen a lot of these Spotify integrations where you can like actually add the song on something like TikTok or through Instagram, or, you know, people bring the music platform. It's kind of integrated into the social media platform, and that definitely helps. I think it also gives people a much easier way to find the song and to actually go support that artist if they liked that video that a creator made. But you still see a lot of copyright issues come up. And I think really there's the random algorithm problem. And then there's also the trying to silence speech through targeted DMCA takedown requests. So I think those are kind of two separate issues. If someone is a company targeting you because they didn't like what you said about their, you know, their IP, or is this just like an algorithm issue? So I think those are the two areas. And I think both of them are kind of helped by a Spotify integration or something where it's very clear how you got that music, you used it in a fair way that was, you know, sanctioned by the platform, sanctioned by the people who control that IP, which makes it easier, you know, if you want to say something bad about a Kanye West song or something and, you know, not get in trouble for it.
Mm-hmm. Louise Mitsakis is a staff writer at Wired. She covers security and social platforms, and you can read all about this fight and more about the meta meme. Her story is that viral video of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dancing is a meta meme. It's up on wired.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.